And we're holding Anchof Gimel Amud Beis, the last line. We started talking yesterday about in the Mishnah, the Meir and the Chachamim disagreed where the kesef for to buy an Eved Kanani's freedom comes from. Rav Meir said it had to dafka come from others, and we said because Rav Meir holds there's no way for an Eved to acquire money by himself, whereas the Chachamim said it could be al yedei atzmai, it could be that he got the money himself. So we discuss a couple of possibilities about what the scenario is. First we said that maybe it's just Rav Meir hold that the Chachamim would hold that there is a way for an Eved to acquire without his master acquiring it, and the same way a wife with her husband, and Rav Meir would say not. First we had Rav Sheshet saying not necessarily. That we're talking about somebody else gave him the money and said, "I'm not shein the rab for reshus boy that you if this is being given on condition that your master doesn't have any reshus over it." So according to the Chachamim, that would work, and according to the mayor, it would not. Then we had Rabbi Lozer's way of understanding it, which is that no, that tanai for sure wouldn't work. According to everybody. But if the other person gives him money and says, "I'm not shein teitzer by l'cheiros, this money is being given to you on condition that." That you'll go free with it. In other words, the only purpose for which this money is available is for you to go free. There you have, Reb Meir would still say that's no good. And the Chachamim would say that works and it's effective. And therefore, that money now can be used to buy his freedom. So now the Gemara says, if we're going to understand it that way, the Rami did a Meir, Adra Meir, the Rami did a Bonan, Adra. Now we're going to find then a contradiction between two statements of Reb Meir and a contradiction between two statements of the Rabbanon. Now this case that we're going to be talking about is not about an Eved and his master, but rather about a wife and her husband. But again, we compared them at the beginning. We said that the Reb Meir, who says that ain kinyan la'eved b'loy rabbi, that there's no way for an Eved to acquire anything without his master acquiring it, would say basically the same thing as far as a woman's property. That her husband acquires it. So, but here we're going to see that here we're going to see on the face of it that Reb Meir says the opposite of that. In the same way, the Chachamim seem to be saying the opposite. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, the background to this din we're going to talk about is we're going to be talking about the din of Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni. Now we know the Torah tells us you have to separate Ma'aser Sheni years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of Shemitah. You have to take the Ma'aser Sheni to your Shalayim and you eat it over there. And if you can't bring it to your shalayim because there's too much of it or it'll spoil or what have you, then you exchange it for money and you bring the money, which is called pidyon ma'aser sheni, and then you bring the money to your shalayim and you eat it over there. Nowadays, there's no Beis Hamikdash, then you just redeem it for money and you destroy the money or you save whatever. You destroy it so you don't end up misusing it. Anyway. The Torah also tells us that when a person redeems their own ma'aser sheni, they have to add a chomesh. This is one of the cases. This is one of the cases where the Torah mentions the concept of a chomesh, which we always say, of course, that a chomesh, even though it sounds like it means one fifth, is really one fourth, because one fourth of the original amount, which would be one fifth of the total. So when you're redeeming your own ma'aser sheni, you have to add a chomesh. So now this braisa is going to be talking about whether that applies when a woman is being poida ma'aser sheni. So the braisa says, "Ein isha poida ma'aser sheni b'loy chomesh." The Tanakhama says that when a woman is redeeming Ma'aser Sheni, and at this point we're assuming that it means Ma'aser Sheni from a field that belongs to her husband, so she can't do that without a chomesh. She still needs to pay the she still needs to pay the chomesh because the pashtus because it's still considered that she has a certain co-ownership of it. And Reb Shimon Elazar Omer Meshum Reb Meir Isha Poida Ma'aser Sheni B'loy Chomesh. And Reb Shimon Elazar says in the name of Reb Meir that no, she could be redeeming it without having to pay the Chomesh because it's not her Ma'aser. So we have to figure out, says the Gemara, Hei Chidomi, what is the scenario? Whose Ma'aser and whose coins is she? Whose Ma'aser is it, and whose coins is she using to be Poida?
Is a shaykh that's hers? Is everything hers? It belongs
Well,
to her husband.
That's what we're going to have to figure out. That's what we're going to be figuring out. We're starting with the assumption We're starting with the assumption that if it's talking about a woman being poida with or without a chomesh, the assumption is that we're talking about her husband's, about her husband's property. Because on the face of it, if it's just talking about her own, then maybe there's not such a chiddush in it, whether she has to pay a chomesh or whether she has to pay a chomesh or not. After all, it is hers. The truth is, Tosfos actually brings in this connection a point from Sifri that it is true that we do have to have a ribui from a different pasuk to say that women can, that that women can be poida maisa sheni in the first place, that these dinim apply to her, and the reason is essentially because the Torah
you hear me? It freezed up. It's not working.
I'm on mute. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, so Tosfos was saying that bringing from the Sifri that the purpose of Maaser Sheni.
Yeah, we lost him because the whole thing went out and we had to restart. He's not here now. He's coming back.
He'll come back in a minute. Yeah. I guess fine. I can make a second pause. I guess I can pause a minute. So I was in the middle of saying. Sorry, we had some technical difficulties over there. Tosfos is bringing from the Sifri that the purpose of Maaser Sheni is that you, or the Ramban says, a member of your family spends a fair amount of time in Yerushalayim to eat it, because it takes a long time to eat it, and therefore you end up learning Torah. Now, women don't have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, as we're going to learn later on in our perek, so maybe therefore the whole concept of Maaser Sheni shouldn't apply to her. So fine, so you need a ribui that it applies to her. But still, on the face of it, the Gemara is assuming, to begin with, that we're talking about over here that produce belongs to her husband and that she's being poided. And the question is whether the concept of adding the chomesh applies to her or not. So that's the Gemara says, hey, chidomi, ilema bezuzi debal or maiser debal. Are you talking about the coins that she's using for the pidyon belong to the husband, and the maiser itself also belongs to the husband? Well, why shouldn't she have to pay the chomesh? Shlichus de baal ka'avda. Isn't she accomplishing the shlichus of her husband? So why would the mayor say that she doesn't add the chomesh? The ela bezuzi didah umaiser didei. So are you talking about rather that the money belongs to her? Namely, Rashi says it's from her nichse malug umaiser didei. And you're talking about that the Maaser belongs to him. Well, the question is, then why should? So why would the Tanakhama say that she has to add the Chomesh? Ish Amrachmana v'lo Isha. When the Pasuk mentions this concept of adding a Chomesh, it says, v'im yigim go'o yigal ish mimaisrei. So the word ish means, on the face of it, means specifically a man adds the Chomesh, and a woman does not. Because in other words, so in this case, in particular, we're saying because it doesn't belong to her, it's her husband's miser rather than her own. So elolav ki hay gavna. So wouldn't it have to be the scenario we're talking about is like what we were saying, da akni lo achem mana. So you would have to say that it's not nichsim alug, because nichsim alug, after all, it is her money, but on the other hand, it's his miser. So on the face of it, elolav ki hay gavna. Must it not be, therefore, the Braisa is talking about the following scenario. The akni lo acher mona, somebody else gave her a mona and was makne to her of amala, and he told her, I'm a nascha tifti bayis a miser. I'm giving you this mona on condition that you use it to redeem miser. In other words, on condition that your husband doesn't have any reshus over this money. So now it seems that Abbanon are going to hold that once she gets that money, it immediately becomes her husband. The Almanas doesn't help. So therefore, she's just accomplishing the shlichus of her husband. So yes, it's not. So when the Pasuk says, v'im go'o yigal ish mimaisrei, she's not an ish. However, she's accomplishing the shlichus of the ish of her husband. Therefore, she'd be giving the chomesh. Reb Meir would hold that her husband doesn't acquire it because she herself was given it only almanas that she uses it for pidyon ma'aser sheni, and therefore it comes out that it's hers, and therefore the miut from go yigal ish mi ma'aser applies. She's not an ish, she's an isha, and therefore the chomesh shouldn't apply. So it would come out, if we understand the braisa that way, that's the scenario it's talking about, then it comes out the chachamim and Reb Meir are each saying exactly the opposite of what they said before. Before we were saying that Reb Meir had said there's no way for an Eved or an Isha to acquire something on their own, and according to Rabbi Elazar, not even if somebody gives it to them, amanas she'en l'rabcha or l'baylach reshus bay. And here we see that he says she could acquire the money that way. And with the chachamim, it's the other way around. Before they said she could, and now they're saying she can't. Now this is all according to Rashi, according to Rashi's girsa and Rashi's understanding. Tosfos has a few problems with Rashi. For one thing, not really a few. Tosfos points out that in that case, why is the machloikas specifically about a husband and wife? The machloikas could equally well be about if it's somebody else is doing it on behalf of somebody else. Instead of mentioning that it's a case of a husband and wife and talking about whether she's potter because she's a woman or not, instead the Gemara could have mentioned the point that look, you don't pay chomesh for somebody else's meiser. Tosfos rather brings a girsa that the Gemara is saying as first again, the Gemara assumed to begin with that we're talking about his meiser and his money, and we said obviously not, because then she's accomplishing a shlichus. So then the Gemara wants to say that maybe it's talking about her money and her meiser. Even when it's her meiser and her money, see, she still shouldn't have to add the chomesh, because again, the word ish would exclude that women never have to pay the chomesh. You have the riboy from in goel yigal, which that a woman can be poydim, that dinim a meiser sheni and being poydim do apply to a woman bchalal. Again, for the reason that Tosfos says that you would think the Sifri says, since the purpose of meiser sheni is in order to increase learning Torah and women aren't chayiv in learning Torah, maybe it shouldn't apply to them, and therefore we need to be told it does apply to them. But you would still say that paying the chomesh never applies to her. But again, the question is, since it already says ish v'lo isha, then we know she's not paying the chomesh, so then the chachamim can't be saying she would. So that's why we had to assume that we're talking about that it is his meiser sheni, and that somebody else is giving her that money in order to acquire it. And again, the point is that it seems that she can have nechosim of her own, and according to the mayor, and And according to the Chachamim, she can't. It's still considered her husband's. And then that comes out that they're saying exactly the opposite of what we understood before. So, Omer Abaya Epoch. So Abaya says, you're right, you have to flip around the opinions. You have to say that in one or the other of these places, the opinions of Reb Meir and the Chachamim have been reversed, and you have to change them around. The Ritva points out that when the Gemara does that, it's actually the second thing that we're bringing that we flip around. Over here, we have a Mishnah against a Braisa. We would rather not say that the Mishnah was taught improperly. We would rather say the Braisa, where Braisa, sometimes you have an individual Braisa, was taught by one Tana, and it's not well known by everybody else. So the Girsa of it may have gotten flipped around by mistake. So Abaya says you have to flip around the opinions in the Braisa to make them match the Mishnah. So you would have the mayor is being consistent with his opinion. He would say that the Choymesh is being paid because even though that money was given to her for the purpose of being paid to Maisa Sheni, it's still not considered hers. It's still considered her husband's money. And it is her husband's payrus as well. Therefore, the Choymesh has to be paid. Whereas the Chachamim would be consistent with their opinion that she can acquire money on her own like that. So therefore, it's her money being used to be paid to her husband's payrus, and therefore the chaimish wouldn't apply because it's not the same owner of the thing. So that's Abaya's way of explaining it. By the way, I mean, even as far as the Nichsa Malug, how do you have, if we assumed at the beginning that it's Nichsa Malug, that was one of Tosfos's questions on Rashi. Look, since he's Oichol Peiros, then it's considered like his money in the first place. So even if we thought that the Peiros come from Nichsa Malug, how would that help us? That was one of Tosfos's questions on Rashi. And there are a few answers, a number of Achronim point out various possibilities that, after all, you have. We learned in Ksubas, for example, he can, while she's still in Arusa, he waives any rights to her property. There's different possibilities like that. So there are possibilities how it's possible for her to have Nichsa Malug, and he doesn't have ownership of it. But here we're talking about the money. The Pashtos, the money she gets only after the fact. And therefore the question is, how is her husband not acquiring it? So that's Abaya's answer. You have to flip around the opinion. Rava Amar Lo Olam Lo Tepuch. Rava says you don't have to flip around the opinions. V'hocha b'maisa d'osim b'ein nosha askinan. Because here in this braisa, you have another possibility. It doesn't have to be that the maiser came from his property, from his payrus, or from her payrus of nichsimalog. Rather, it can be that maiser she inherited from her father's house. So this is Maisa Sheni that her father had separated out, and now she yaushined it from him. So the machlokas is on a different point, not whether it's considered hers or not. For sure it's considered hers. But it is considered, Tosfos point, not Rashi rather, points out, based on the Gemara that we learned in Ksubas, that what will happen is, it's a Yerusha. Like any Yerusha, eventually we're going to have to sell it, and we're going to have to use it to buy land, where the husband will get payrus from it, like any Nichsa Malug. But the point is, it is hers, it is her payrus. But the reason behind the machlokas, Reb Meir Latayme, Dama Maisa Mamon Hektishu, Reb Meir then is going according to his Shitta. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about, can you take Maisa Sheni and use it to be Makadish and Isha? Bechlal, in Halacha, the acid test of whether something belongs to you is whether you can use it to be Makadish and Isha. So we're going to go through that later on in the Masechta, in the third parak. So can you use Maisa Sheni for that purpose? Reb Meir says no, because Reb Meir says Maisa Sheni fundamentally belongs to Hashem. Hashem is giving you the opportunity to eat Bishulchan Gavoya, but it's not yours to be Mekadesh with. So therefore, like Koni Leibal. Therefore, Reb Meir says the husband doesn't acquire it like any Nichsa Malug. So it's considered hers. And since we have the miut that an Isha doesn't have to pay the choymish, therefore she doesn't pay the choymish, even if she uses her husband's money. Or rather, it's not because of the miut of Isha. Rashi says it's because whose money is she using to be poideh? Her husband's money. Well, then it's not the original owner of the Meiser. She owns the Meiser in a way that whatever ownership there is. In other words, the mayor is saying the Meiser Sheni basically belongs to Hashem. But the one who's considered the bailim of the Meiser Sheni is her. And on the other hand, the money she's using to be poideh is her husband's. So therefore, it's not, you don't have a chomesh because it's different people. V'rabbonon, the Taimai, the Chachamim, are going to their shitta, Gabri Mom and Hedyatu. They say in that same sugya that Maiser is considered Mom and Hedyat. It's considered your Mom, and you could use it to be Makadesh with. So therefore, they would say in that case, for Koni Lebal, so the husband acquires it just like any other Nichsimalog. So Hilkoch Shlichus de Baal Kaabda. So now when she uses her husband's money, then it comes out, she's accomplishing her husband's Shlichus. And therefore, the chomesh has to be paid. So if we understand the machlokas that way, says Rava, then it has nothing to do with the question of whether an isha can acquire something independently, because, yeah, when money comes into her hands, it's going to be her husband's, or at least it's going to be used to buy nixim alug, that'll be her husband's, and so forth. But here, the question is, when she yaushins maaser sheni, is it even considered her property to the extent that her husband can then take it over? Reb Meir says no, because it's mom and gavoya, and the Chachamim say yes, because it's mom and hedya. So nothing to do, therefore, with the machloikas about the regular case where she receives money. Where there, Reb Meir would say that it can't be hers, it immediately goes to her husband, and the Chachamim would say that it could. Again, as we talked about yesterday, Tosfos discusses at some length over here, and of course everybody after Tosfos discusses that Tosfos in turn about who the halacha ends up being like. Is Tosfos first discusses that the halacha may be like Reb Meir, and specifically like Reb Sheshis's understanding of Reb Meir, that if somebody gives the Eved or the Isha money and says, Amanas she'en l'rabcha reshus, or Amanas she'en l'baylach reshus, then it would work. And on the other hand, Tosfos says, maybe not. The halacha may actually be like the halacha may actually be like the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Lazar's understanding, which is that the only way for it to work would be Amanas she'teitz b'lecheirus, or Amanas that you're going to use it for pidyon ma'aser sheni, or whatever. In Shulchan Aruch, it paskins like the Rabban against the mayor. Okay. The Gemara says, we've been talking about the various ways in which an Eved can go free. We established that you have Kesef, and that got us into this whole discussion of where the Kesef comes from. And we discussed also it can be accomplished through a Shtar, where again, we discussed yesterday the question of whether that Shtar has to be written with the consent of the Eved or not.
Now there's no life from this case.
So now the point is that we said this case over here, the mayor and the Chachamim are arguing, and it sounded like the opposite of before, but we said it's not really, because no, they're arguing about a different point, a point specific to Maaser Sheni, nothing to do with anything that we were discussing until now. So now the Gemara says, Tonim, we learn in a Braisa, Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin. Here's another way, or not really another way. Tosfos points out that we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara like this. We know the Torah tells us that with an Eved Kanani, if the master knocks out his tooth or his eye, and we're going to discuss now any of a bunch of other body parts, then the Eved goes free. Now the Gemara is going to discuss soon, on Amud Beis, do you need a Shtar Shichur for that, or does he go free automatically? The Tana of our Mishnah holds that he needs a Shtar Shichur. Therefore, the Tana of our Mishnah is not mentioning this point of Shein V'ayin, because he already mentioned Kesef and Shtar. So fine, you have a particular way where we force the master to write a Shtar, namely where he knocked out the Shein V'ayin. But it's still fundamentally the same thing, whereas the Tana of the Braisa is giving us more detail and mentioning this point of Shein V'ayin. So Yotze B'Shein V'ayin, V'Rosha Evorim, Shein and Chozrin, also any of the tips of different body parts that won't regenerate. So we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow a list of what they are. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema shein va'ayin k'sivi." I understand where we get that the Eved goes free with shein va'ayin. A different reason, by the way, that Ramban brings a different reason why the Mishnah doesn't mention it, is because the Mishnah is not mentioning things that are derech knas. And also because the Mishnah wanted to focus on things that are Aydei Atzma or Aydei Acherim. When it comes to the Shein Ra'ayin, there's no difference. It has to be it's the master himself who knocked out the eye or the tooth or whatever, and there's no Atzma or Aydei Acherim. The Mishnah was only stressing the difference of Kesef Aydei Atzma and Shtar Aydei Acherim, or vice versa. So those would be other reasons why the Mishnah didn't list it. Anyway, the Gemara says, Bishlema Shein Ra'ayin Ksivi. I understand Shein Ra'ayin, it says in the Pasuk. So it's clear the Eved goes free when those are knocked out. Where do we see that the same thing applies to the tips of other limbs? For example, fingertips and toes and things like that. We'll learn tomorrow. And the answer is Dumya de Shein V'ayin. The answer is we're going to say that they're similar to a Shein V'ayin. In other words, we're going to make what's called a Binyan Av or a Mamatzinu. We're going to say, well, a lot of times it's one of the shloshes in Mitzvah and Adreshes Behem is Mibinyan of Mikosav Echon and Binyan of Mishnei Ksuvim. We have the Torah gives us an example of something, and we're meant to understand that there are other examples of the same kind of thing. So here, the Torah is telling us Shein V'ayin, and it includes other ones that are similar in that way, where they're not going to regenerate. So we're going to do that. So Dumya the Shein V'ayin, Ma Shein V'ayin, Mumin Shebut Golori V'ainin Chozrin. Knocking out an eye or knocking out a tooth is a visible mum, and they never regenerate. You take them away, they never grow back. Afkol Mumin Shebut Golori V'ainin Chozrin. The same thing would apply to any other visible mum, which is not going to regenerate. Which, by the way, Tosfos elsewhere talks about, and then other Mephoshim talk about, that when it comes to animals for Karbonus, and when it comes to a Koyan serving in the Bais Mikdash, not necessarily is a tooth being knocked out considered a mum. There it's actually considered a mum Shabaseso, it's considered a more concealed mum, depending where in the mouth it is exactly. But the difference is that the difference is basically that it is normal for teeth to fall out when a person gets old. But here the Torah is specifically saying that a Shein is one of those things that's considered a mum and that he goes free. So it is true. It's not the same definition, but it doesn't have to be the same definition
as a behemoth.
As a mum of a behemoth or a kohen. Yeah.
The Gemara speak about if it's the front teeth or the back teeth.
No, the Gemara is not meant. No, because when it comes to an Eved, it doesn't make a difference. So the Gemara asks why. Just the opposite. We should consider Shein V'ayin to be two psukim that are teaching us the same thing. Whenever you have that, you don't learn from there to anywhere else. Because, in other words, if it was meant to use that as a binyan av, it would have said only one of them, and we would have learned the other one from it. So instead, if it says Shein V'ayin, we should assume it means only Shein V'ayin, nothing else. So it's not a binyan av, just the opposite. The answer is tzricha. The answer is no, because that concept of Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Pechad doesn't apply when you couldn't otherwise have learned one from the other. When you have, there's a chidush in each one over the other, and therefore you couldn't have learned one from the other, then the Torah does have to write both of them, and we can still use it as a binyan av. So D'i Kosev Rachmana Shein, if the Torah had learned or had taught it, had mentioned only by the case of the tooth, you would have said, Habamina, afilu shein decholav. Then you would think it applies even to a milk tooth, a baby tooth. So an Eved Katan, you knock out his baby tooth, maybe he goes free. No, Kosav Rachmana Ayin, therefore the Torah also writes the eye, where the eye never regenerates. So therefore we have to be talking about the kind of tooth that's never going to regenerate either. If the Torah, on the other hand, had only written an I, then you would think, you would think, you know what, an I was first created with him. He was born with an I, but a tooth not. Maybe Bechlali doesn't go free when you knock out his tooth because he wasn't born with teeth. They only developed later. So therefore, you need to be told both of them. Once you have both of them, then we can use them as a binyan av to say that we learn from them to other Rosh Eivarim. But the Gemara asks still, maybe instead of darshining it as a binyan av, maybe instead you should darshin it using a different one of the midas. The ema ki yake klal. The pasuk goes like this: ki yake ishas ein avdoi. A person hits the eye of his slave, oyas ein amoso, or the eye of his maidservant, v'shichasa, and he destroys it. Lachofshi shalchenu tachas eino. You should set him free in place of his eye. And then the next pasuk says the same thing about the tooth. And the point being that maybe we should say ki yake, when he hits him, is klal. That would be a general rule. So it would mean any way that he hits him and injures him, then the Eved goes free. Shein v'ayin prat, and then the words shein and ayin would be a prat, in which case klal prat, then we would use the middah of klal prat, which means ein b'chlal elamash b'prat. So it means the klal includes only what's in the prat. In other words, the Torah puts the klal first, but then it puts a prat to say, don't think to learn that it should apply to other things. In fact, don't even try to do a binyan out of it. I put a klal first, and then I put a prat. Hashem is in effect saying, to tell you, only focus on the prat and ignore any other possibilities. So therefore, that would mean, so shein v'ayin ein midachrin eloi. So it would be only the tooth and the eye, nothing else. The answer is no, because lachofshi shalachenu chozav acholol. When the pasuk continues, you should send him free, then that's a klal again. Meaning, in other words, it actually says, because instead, the pasuk could have said, for example, chofshi hu, he is free, or yetzei chofshi, he goes free. The lachofshi yishalachenu is another klal telling us you have various ways in which you have to send him free. So therefore, so now you have a klal, a prat, a klal. So klal, a prat, a klal, then you have a different rule. Iyat don elakein aprat. Now, as we learned the other day, then what you do is you include other things that are similar to the prat. So you figure out what does the prat have in common and what do other things have in common with it. So ma prat mefurash mum shabagoli v'ainim chayz. Just like the prat is specified, like we said, as things that are visible on the body and they're never going to regenerate. The same thing would apply to any other mumim that are visible and not going to regenerate. So it wouldn't apply to baby teeth that we said. It wouldn't apply to other things in the body that can regenerate. And it also wouldn't apply to internal injuries.
The thing is, the Shalchan is like really speaking about this thing. You speak about something else. How does he go free? But
no, but that's the point. Rashi says, if it had said chofshi hu, or something like that, then yeah, it wouldn't be a klal. But when it says lachofshi yishalachenu, we're focusing more on the word yishalachenu is more of a ribul. You have to send them free in many different cases. So implying that there's more than just shein v'ayin, there's other ones as well. So that gives us klal or prat or klal.
And is there any limit to have dafka, something you could see with clothes on or without clothes on?
No, that doesn't make a difference.
You might speak without clothes, because there's a lot of parts that don't regenerate what you can see if you weren't close.
It's true, but nevertheless, that's not a difference. Okay. That's not a difference. After all, you have times when a person is legitimately not wearing clothes in the bathhouse, right, for example. So yeah, so yeah, so no. So the Gemara says, on the other hand, you could argue, e ma prat mefurash mumin shabagoloi uboto mimalachtoi. You could argue, though, there's a different point that you can say that the tooth and the eye have in common. Not only it's mum shabagolui, but it's also botum malachtoi. Once that body part is damaged, you can't use it anymore. You can't. The eye is blinded. The tooth can't be used for chewing. So afkol mum shabagolui ve'ene chozer u botum malachtoi. So maybe you would say then you have to have, in order for the evan to go free, it has to be something which is visible and it's not going to regenerate, and it's something that's botum malachtoi. Aloma Tanya, in which case, why do we learn in a braisa? You have a case, Tolash Bizkonai. Suppose the master grabs a hold of the Eved's beard and yanks the dilda by etzem, and he causes by that he dislocates a bone in the Eved's jaw. Eved Yotzeh and Behem Lacherus. Then the Eved goes free with it. So now on the face of it, what was that? That's what we're asking. So there's two ways of learning the question, actually. On the face of it, the Gemara is asking that you haven't prevented that bone from doing any work that it didn't do before, because... So Rashi points out, it's true. Now, this is it is a nechoizer. It's true that once it's dislocated, it's eventually going to dry up and fall off. Apparently, Rashi is assuming we don't mean the actual jaw itself. We mean perhaps just one of the little bones over there that makes up that part of the face. The point is, on the face of it, Rashi says there's no bitul malacha, because that bone over there, whatever little bone we're talking about, is not necessarily accomplishing something. But it's a mum shabagoli, because you can see now the guy's face is twisted, and yet Eved Yotze Bo L'Cheirus. Now the Rambam has a different understanding of it. The Rambam, when he brings this din, he mentions that in fact, there is a bitul malacha involved, namely that the teeth that are the Rambam apparently understands, we are talking about the actual jaw itself is dislocated. So what happens is, therefore, so now when the jaw is dislocated, now the teeth on that jaw are not able to function because the teeth require they're attached to the jaw and they have to be lined up. Well, yeah, they have to be lined up. And now, not that he can't eat, he can eat with difficulty, but the point is he can't use those teeth. So that being the case, then it is considered bitul malacha. So the Rambam would understand that we are actually talking about over here about something involving bitul malacha, where it does actually prevent the teeth from working afterwards. So the Rambam would understand that. So the Kesef Mishnah discusses over there, and he says that the Rambam would understand our Gemara to be saying, let's see. So he says that. So you're saying, well, ma prat mefurish. You're saying like this. We're trying to figure out again. We're trying to figure the klal of prat to klal over here. On the face of it, it's true that you're being mevatel mamalacha. On the other hand, the fact is, it's not necessarily a mum shabagoloi because that bone is, after all, covered by skin. So it's not mum shabagoloi. And the braisa is telling us that he goes free, and apparently only because of the ribui of yeshalchenu is he going free, implying that just bitul malacha is not enough. So the question is, why are we saying, why is the braisa saying, mum shabagoloi, or ve'enei choizer, when it should be mentioning instead mum shebegoloi or bottom mamalachtoi, and not focus on whether it's begoloi or not, because we see over here it's bottom mamalachtoi because it prevents the teeth on that side of that jaw from working, and yet we're only saying that it works because of bitul malach, and yet we're saying and it's not mum shebegoloi, and yet he goes free. So why did we mention that the prat is, why do we mention the prat mefurish mum shebegoloi ve'enei choizer? It should have said mum shebegoloi or bottom mamalachtoi. So two different ways of understanding the Gemara's question. Anyway, the answer is lachofshi shalachenu ribuyahu. The answer is we're not going to douche in using a klal or prat or klal. We're going to rather douche in using ribui miyot to ribui, like we talked about the other day in the Gemara. In which case, ribui miyot to ribui means that we're adding everything except for one thing that is the least similar to what it says, to what's mentioned in the Torah. We talked about it the other day in connection with Marseya, for example, as far as piercing the Eved Ivri's ear, where Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda learned that way and said that it means that you can use anything sharp. The only thing you mamayik is sam, is that you can't use like an acid or something to burn through the ear, but you could use a sharp piece of wood or something, whereas Rebbe learned with klal the prat to klal and said it had to be metal. So here we're saying instead you're going to learn with ribui miyot ribui. So now you're only excluding one thing. So therefore it can be even where it's not bottom of malachtoi. So you, again, according to that would be how Rashi would understand it, that even though it's not bottom of malachtoi, still we have a ribui to exclude it because it is mum shabagoli ve'inechozer. According to the Rambam, according to the Kesef Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam, you would have to say the point is that because we have the ribui, we're saying we're including not only bottom and malachta, as is the case over here where the jaw is dislocated, but also even though over here it's not so begoli because the bone is covered by skin. Well, the Gemara asked the iribuyahu. Okay, but if you're going to be using ribui miyot v'ribui, afilu hi kohu al yodiv itzamsa, then we should apply, the same din should apply, even if the master hit the eved on the hand and it swelled up, but eventually it's going to recover. Actually, tzamsa, it actually translates as yavsha, that it dried, not swelled up, it's the opposite, it dried up. He hit him in such a way that his hand shriveled up. But eventually, it's going to recover. Okay. Whatever, there could be such a scenario. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Let's say it is. Anyway, so you're going to say you're from a ribu. You're learning that aloma tanya. Well, then why do we learn in a braisa? He kohu al yodiv itzamsa. If you hit him on his hand and it shriveled, v'soifalachsa. But eventually, it's going to recover. Ein eved yotze balacheres. Then the eved does not go free. Well, if you're learning from a ribu, miut ribu, why not? The answer is, imkain, if you're going to include everything anyway, shein v'ayin, maya hani, like, then what was the point of writing shein v'ayin? You have to be You have to be excluding something on the basis of Shein V'ayin. Again, now you can't say that it just means it has to be Mumin Sheba Galui, because Pnei Yeshua, the Shit Lanoid Lami and Pnei Yeshua and others point out, then Taka the Torah could have only written one, either Shein or Ayin, because it wrote both Shein and Ayin. So we learn from that, we said before, why we have to say each one individually, but the point is we also learn that it has to be Mumin Sheba Galui. So it has to be Mumin Sheba Galui. We would have needed only one of them to tell us Mumin Sheba Galui. So once we have both of them, then it means, in other words, that we're also excluding something which is not a mum kavua. It has to be a permanent mum, rather than in this case where the hand shriveled up, etc., where it's only a temporary thing. So that's the bottom line so far. So we have it has to be a mum sheba galui. It has to be a visible mum. It has to be einei chozer. It won't regenerate. We're mentioning also bottom of malachta. It does. There can be cases where it prevents the aver from functioning. Although we're saying maybe not necessarily. That depends according to Rashi or the Rambam. According to Rashi, this point of dislocating something in the jaw is not mabatum of malachta. According to the Rambam, it is. The fact that he has a dislocated jaw in and of itself doesn't necessarily make him work slower.
Yeah, it takes so much on to eat.
No, because again, according to Rashi, it's not changing anything at all. It's Rashi had used the expression etzem dezok and lav midi hava ovid. That bone was not really accomplishing anything before. It was just there, as opposed to according to the Rambam, we're talking about a jaw, and that being dislocated makes a big difference. Because now he can't eat properly. But and we're saying also, though, it does have to be a permanent mum rather than, for example, this example of where he hit his hand or his arm and it went shriveled up and now eventually is going to regenerate. That's not enough for him to go free with. By the way, this that you have, that the Pulsic mentions Shein V'ayin, and we learn all the other ones from it, as we just said, there's an interesting verse they say on this. I don't remember the source of it. And that says, why Taka does the Torah mention specifically Shein V'ayin? Why not, given that we're learning from it other body parts, why not mention other ones? And the answer is the remez. How does it come the concept of an eved in the first place? It's from the whole story of Chum and Knan with Noyach over there in Parshas Noyach. And what happened? Chum used his eye to see what he shouldn't be seeing, and he used his mouth to talk to his brothers by Yagad the Shneach of Machut, and everything developed from there. So therefore, his descendants, if they get their Shein V'ayin knocked out, then therefore they've, like, so to speak, they've gotten the punishment that their ancestor Chum should have gotten, and therefore now they can go free because of it.
So it's favorable what he did for them, but they go free.
Well, no, the point is that the fact that they become an eved in the first place is a detriment. Actually, by the way, you should know the Medrash says that the whole purpose of them becoming avodim was meant as a benefit for them. And the Medrash says, consider, for example, look at Eliezer Eved Avraham. Look at Tovi Avdei Sharon Amil. Look what great people they came because they were working for Avraham and for Amgamil, respectively. But nevertheless, it's still a hard thing for them to be avodim. But we're saying that now, when the Shein V'ayin is knocked out, then now they've gotten the full punishment for what Chum did, and therefore they can now go free. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tanan Rabbanan, b'kulam eved yotze behem l'cheirus. With all of these things, the Shein V'ayin and all the other Rosh Evarim that we're going to list in the Gemara tomorrow, and Eved does go free. However, it's Sorech Lekabel, Get Shichur. However, he does have to receive a Get Shichur in order to be fully free. We talked about in Gittin, and we mentioned a few days ago also, that with an Eved Knani, you have two different types of Kinyan. You have a Kinyan Mamon, that is a monetary asset which you own, and you also have a Kinyan Isser, the fact that he's also to marry a Bas Yisrael. So now the Shein V'ayin may take away the Kinyan Mamon, but you still have the Kinyan Isser, and therefore Get Shichur is needed to undo that. Divrei Reb Shimon, that's what Reb Shimon says. Reb Meir Omer Ein Tzarich. Reb Meir says he doesn't need a Get Shichur. Similarly, Reb Eliezer Omer Tzarich, Reb Tarfon Omer Ein Tzarich. Same machlokas. Rabbi Akiva Omer Tzarich, and Rabbi Akiva says, like Reb Shimon and like Reb Eliezer, that he does need a get shichur. Hamachriim lifnei chachamim amru. The chachamim, the ones who sat before the chachamim and would decide between them, they would evaluate what the Chachamim are saying and consider which one seems to be more logical and which one we should, whose opinion we should accept. Machria literally means to sort of like to make a, like to outweigh. So like they would weigh, they would sit over there and they would weigh. You have on the one side, you have Reb Shimon and Reb Eliezer and Reb Akiva. On the other side, you have Reb Meir and Reb Tarfon. So they wouldn't just weigh the numbers of people on each side. They would also weigh the svaris and conclude. It seems more logical. Many times you have in the Gemara that one of the Chachamim will say Nirin. It seems more logical to accept this Tana's svara over this one. So this kind of thing is you had people in the Beis Medrash who they specifically did that. We have this Gemara in Gittin. Rashi says over there. I don't know who these Machri and Lifnei Chachamim are. There is a Rishon over there named Rabbi Shmuel ben Chachmon, who wrote a Pirush on Gittin, and he explains that you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions a few people who were donin lifnei Chachamim. They would sit in front of the Chachamim and discuss as Talmidim and argue over the points of Halacha, and the Gemara lists them over there. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai is one of them, Shimon Atimni or Shimon ben Zoyma is another one, and there's a couple of others. So this Rabbi Shmuel ben Chachmon says they are the same as the Machri and Lifnei Chachamim over here. They were Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer and the rest of them, but they would, their role in the Beis Medrash was once the greater Chachamim had said their opinions, then they would weigh them and then consider and figure out the logical basis behind it and figure out which one's opinion seems to be more logical. Anyway, so they said, Oimrim, Nirin Divir Reb Tarfon B'Shein V'Ayin, it seems more logical to accept Reb Tarfon's opinion and Reb Meir's that you don't need to get Shichur when he's being freed with Shein V'Ayin, when it was the actual tooth or the actual eye that was knocked out. Sha'at Torah Zikzaloi, because the Torah gives him the schus to go out free with those, and it says so. The Divir Reb Akiva B'Sharei Vorim. On the other hand, these Chachamim, these Talmidim, said it seems more logical. So it was Machriyim, like they're literally making a compromise. It seems more logical to make a compromise and accept what Reb Akiva is saying and require get and Reb Shimon and Reb Shimon and Reb Eliezer when it comes to Sharei Vorim, when it comes to other limbs, Hoyol Knas Chachamim, because it's a Knas that the Chachamim imposed. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? It's not a Knas of the Chachamim. Knas. Knasu, what do you mean? It's not a knas that the Chachamim imposed. Kroy kardoshinen. We daushin from psukin. Whether we daushin with klal or prat or klal, or ribui miyut ribui, or however it is exactly we daushin, we're daushining psukim. It's not something that the Chachamim invented. So what do they mean, knas Chachamim? Ela hoil umidrash Chachamim. Rather, what they mean is something that was daushin by the Chachamim. So they're saying there's a difference between those and the other ones. Now, what do you mean? Why should that make a difference if it was Daushin by the Chachamim? So what? Tosfos says, we have many basic concepts of Torah, many, many fundamental halachas that are learned from Darashas. So Tosfos says over here that no, what it means is when we're saying he requires a get shichru, we mean Dirabbanan. The reason is because people out on the street may not be familiar with this drasha. They may think the Torah says Shein V'Ayin, so that's all it is. So now, if afterwards the master were to one day meet the former Eved on the street, and the Eved doesn't have a get shichur, the master is going to say, "Hey, you're my Eved," and then he's going to call into question. Meanwhile, this former Eved has married a Bas Yisrael and has children, and it's going to bring that all of that into question. Motzi Laz. So therefore, the Chum said, "Let him have a get shichur," and that way, if rumors ever start circulating, then all he has to do is pull out the get shichur. But yeah, midaraisa, it wouldn't be required. That's one answer in Tosfos. Tosfos gives another answer, which is Shein v'ayin. The pasuk says on them lachofshi yishalchenu, implying the word that implies that to begin with he's free. As soon as the Shein v'ayin was knocked out, or rather, as soon as Adris has given about it on Beis Din, he goes free immediately. On the other hand, when it comes to the Sharei Varim, where we're saying ultimately we said we're only learning that it works with the Sharei Varim because the pasuk finishes yishalchenu, he should send him free. Well, there we have a Gzeira Shava from an Isha, whereby an Isha, you have the expression, where she requires a get, and therefore we would say over here that it would also require a get for the ones from which we have to learn from yishalchenu. So that would be another reason. So according to the second answer in Tosfos, according to the Riva, it would actually be needed daraisa, whereas according to the first answer, according to Rabbeinu Tam's answer, it's needed only drabbanan in order that there shouldn't be motzi lahaz.
Because the word shalchem, but like this, I would say that when Shein V'Ayin happens, he is like Ishtarot, who her husband dies automatically. She goes free.
Maybe. I mean, you could learn it that way, whatever the case. The point is, Tosfos is saying you don't really need the word Yishalachenu for those. In effect, when the Pesach is saying L'chofshi Yishalachenu, it means as far as Shein V'ayin, he's immediately Chofshi. You don't need anything else. Therefore, you don't need a Get Shichur. As opposed to everything else, you would need Yishalachenu. And what does Yishalachenu mean? A Get Shichur. Okay. So the Gemara says, my time at Rav Shimon. Well, then why does Rav Shimon and the other Chachamim with him hold that you need a Get Shichur for all of them? And the answer is, like we said, Yalif Shiluach Shiluach Meishi. He's learning on Xer Shava of the word Yishalachenu from the case of a wife. Ma Isha Bashtar af Eved Nami Bashtar. A wife is divorced with a shtar the same way. The Eved, whether it's Shein V'ayin or anything else, he needs a shtar. Rav Meir, what does Rav Meir answer to that? He says, because of Chofshi Levasoith, if it said the word Chofshi at the end, if it said Yishalachenu Chofshi, then fine, Kidika Amrit, then you'd be right. In other words, how do you accomplish Chofshi? Through Yishalachenu, through a get. Hashta the cost of Lachofshi Yishalachenu, but here, since it puts Lachofshi first, have Lachofshi Meikra, then it means he's a Chofshi to begin with, even before the Yishalachenu, and therefore it means no Yishalachenu is necessary. Now, the Machriyim, the Fnei Chachamim, said that there can be a difference between Shein V'ayin and the other ones, namely again, either like Rabbi Natam said that they would agree midaraisa get shichur is never needed, like Rabbi Meir and like Rabbi Meir and company, or but it's only midrabbanan that we require it, or like the Riva says in Tosfos that we do need even daraisa because the Mechirin Lefnei Chachamim would say that you could say the Lachofshi is referring to the Shein V'ayin and Yishalachenu is referring to everything else. So therefore, so that would be a reason why to distinguish between. So Yishalachenu, yeah, you learn from a get that you. Yeah. Fine. Like Moses says, Tanan Rabban, you learn in a brayso. So let's talk about some detailed dinim about this Shein V'ayin business. He kohu al einay v'sima. Suppose that the master hit the eved on his eye v'sima and he blinded it. Al Osnay Bechersha, or he hit him on his ear and he became deaf. Eved Yotz Behem Lacheros, the Eved goes free with those. In other words, you shouldn't think that it means that when we say Ayin or Shane or whatever, it means that the actual damage has to be visible. In the case where he goes blind or he's deaf, the damage itself is not visible, but it's in a visible limb where that limb has stopped working. The ear has stopped working or the eye has stopped working.
It's not working, it's a little harder.
No, we're talking about the sima. If it's a little harder, we're talking about soup. The chersha means he actually went deaf in that ear. That ear no longer functions as an ear.
Right, but he has the other ear.
He has the other ear, fine, but he's still, yeah. The same way as with an eye. He has two eyes also, and yet one eye is an eye. Yeah. On the other hand, if the master did not hit him on his eye, but rather let's say he banged the wall near his eye, and he got so frightened that because of that now he can't see his eyesight was damaged, or keneged ozno, he bangs the wall near his ear the enoshimeya, and now he can't hear. Ein eved yotze behen l'cheros, and with those an eved does not go free. So the Gemara asks, "Lememr de kol olav omer of shaman l'rav Ashi, lememr de kol olav klumu." So are you telling me that the noise that a hezek caused by noise is not considered anything because that's what you have over here? In effect, it was a really loud bang, and that caused something to go haywire in his eye or his ear or whatever. And you're telling me that's not considered a hezek?
But the noise is the effect, but he actually hit him.
No, he didn't. That's the point. If he hit him on his eye, that's what we said. Keneged einay, keneged oznay. He hit the wall near his eye. The Eved is standing next to the wall. The master gives a huge, loud bang on the wall. Oh. And because of that bang, he goes deaf or he goes blind.
The wall of the eye.
No. So you're telling me, Omer of Shaman of Ashi, the member to call a lav klumu, v'hatoni Romi by Yecheskel, didn't Romi by Yecheskel teach a braisa in Bava Kama, so we'll learn it in a few months, Ves Hashem. Suppose that a rooster sticks its head into the inside of a glass cavey, the tokaboy, and he makes a loud noise over there. Over shavra, and that noise breaks the cavey. Meshalim nezek shalim, the owner of the chicken has to pay nezek shalim because the hezek that was caused by the noise is considered a nezek like anything else. And similarly, the V'omer Rabbi Yosef, similarly, Rabbi Yosef says, Amri Bei Rav, they say in Bei Rav, which can mean the Beis Medrash, can mean specifically the Yeshiva of Rav, anyway, a similar din, Sus Shatsonaf, if a horse neighed, V'chamor Shenoar, or if a donkey brayed, just like in English, you have different words for the different noises, neighed or brayed or whatever, so in Lashon Kodesh, you have different words for the different noises, Sonaf for a horse, and Noar for a donkey, and so forth. The Shavru Kalim Basir Chabayis, and with that noise, they broke Kalim in the house. Meshalim Chatzin Nezik, and they have to pay Chatzin Nezik. Now, why in the case of the chicken is it Nezik Shalim, and in the case of these other animals, it's Chatzin Nezik? The Gemara explains over there that these are actually according to two different Manda Omars. We're going to learn there in Baba Kama in a few months, Bez Hashem, about the concept of Chatzin Nezik of Tzroyus. You can have a case where an animal, you can have a case, for example, let's say where an animal steps on something or kicks something or whatever and directly breaks it. Then you can have the case where an animal steps on pebbles and one of those pebbles goes and flies off from under its feet and goes and breaks something. So we learn in the Gemara over there in the second paragraph of Baba Kama that you have to pay Chatzin Nezik for that. On the other hand, Sumchus says in the name of a mayor that no, you pay Nezik Shalim. These cases over here, where the damage is being caused by the noise of the animal or the chicken, is like tzroyus, because not directly, the animal didn't directly peck at the thing and break it. It didn't directly step on it or break it. It only made a noise. It only made a sound, yeah. So Reb Meir, at Sumchus, in the name of Reb Meir, was going to say that you paid Nezik Shalom. That was the braisa about the chicken was from him. The statement of Reb Yosef, Amri Bei Rav, is a point to the Chachamim that you pay only Chatzin Nezik. Anyway, the point is, that, yes, a nezek caused by noise is considered a noise. So why is it different over here? The answer is omalei, sort of Ashi answers, shiny odom. It's different when a person is damaged than when kelim are damaged. De kibin de bar dasu, since a person has das, ihu miv is nafshe. What it means is he's the one who made himself scared. Like he should have been able to ignore it, not pay so much attention to it to the extent that it would have such a psychological effect on him. So therefore it's only a grumma. It's only an indirect cause of a nezek, and that's not considered to be kedetanya. Just like we learn in a braisa, for example, hamavis es chaveroi, when a person. If a person frightens somebody else, same idea, for example, let's say he comes out behind him and makes a loud noise, and because of that, the other person gets injured. Potter midine adam, that person is potter from paying in Beistin. V'chayev midine shemayim, but he's liable for midine shemayim, which means, Rashi explains over there in Baba Kama, it means if he pays the other person, then he'll be potter from paying from midine shemayim, but otherwise Hashem is going to hold him responsible for the damage. Ketzad, what's an example? For example, if he yelled loudly into the other guy's ear and made him deaf, potter, then he would be potter for that because it was only a noise and the other guy didn't have to pay so much attention to it. Or actually one of the Mephoshim, I think the Yad Ramah, says that maybe he could have like turned his head away a little bit or something so it's not so intense. On the other hand, ochazohu, but if he grabbed him by the hand where the guy can't get away, but talk about ozne, and then he yelled in his ear, and he made him deaf, chayev, because then you can't say, the guy's a ben das, he couldn't have moved away. And we couldn't have done anything different. So we see, in other words, that a hezek by a coil, when it comes to a person, is only considered a grum. Now, over here, by the way, we're saying that he's chayib din shemayim. That doesn't extend to the point over here that we're going to say that because of that, he should go and free the Eved in order to be potim din shemayim. We don't say that. And we just say that the Eved doesn't go free with that. Okay. Turn it up on him. So he's not yoytzim din shemayim. I mean, in other words, because it's an Eved, maybe you don't have din shemayim in the first place. We learn in a braisa. Suppose he hit him on his eye, and instead of going completely blind, it just went partially blind. Or al shino, he hit him on the tooth. The nodada and the tooth became loose. If under the current conditions, the Eved can still use the eye or the tooth, he may not see as clearly with it, but he can see with it. He can still chew with this tooth. And the Eved doesn't go free with that. If not, he completely can't use it. And he still goes free. Then we learn another braisa. What if the eye to begin with was already dim? So before the master ever did anything, already the eye was not seeing fully. Vesima, and now the Oden made it completely blind, or Shina Neduda, or the tooth was already loose, Vihipila, and now the master knocked it out altogether. So again, it depends. Im Yochel Lishtamish Ben Kvar, if he was able to use it before even a little bit, then Ebed Yotzeben Lacherus, and the Ebed does go free, because now you had previously you had some use of it, and now he has no use of it at all. Vim Lab, if not, Ein Ebed Yotzeben Lacherus, then the Ebed doesn't go free. Now, why do we need both those braises? The Gemara points out at Sricha, we do need both of them. If we were only told the first braisa about where the eye originally was normal and now is half blind, you would say, you know why, it goes free. Or you would say, you know why he goes free. Because before it was a perfect eyesight, and now he has and now it's damaged eyesight. Abel Hocha, but in the second braisa, where to begin with it was a weak eye, Demeikra Nami Nahorat Chisha, to begin with it was a weak sight, Emaloi, maybe that's not enough for him to go free. The Iashmin and Ha, on the other hand, if we only had the second braisa, you would say Mishum Besami Lagamri, he made him completely blind. Abel Hocha, but in the first case, Mishum Delois Samuel Lagamri, he didn't make him completely blind, Emaloi. Maybe not. And therefore, we need both braises. So regardless, if the key thing is always, was it usable before and it's not usable now? Then he goes free. If it's still usable, then not. Similarly, the Gemara says, another din, turn it up on, suppose that the master was a doctor. So the Eved says to the master, my eye is hurting. Can you put some medicine in my eye to cure? And then while he did that, Bissima, so the master does that, and his hand slips or whatever, and accidentally makes him blind. Or Lachter Loishino, similarly, the Ebed says to the master, can you clean around my tooth? Can you, like you have nowadays, you go to the dentist, you know, and they use their sharp tools over there to get the plaque and whatever from around your teeth. So do that. The Pila, and he accidentally knocked out the tooth. Sichik ba'odin, now the master, now the slave can laugh at the master, but yotze l'cheiris, he goes free. You didn't mean to damage it, but you did, and therefore I get to go free because of that. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, v'shichasa, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, the pasuk says v'shichasa, he damages it, which means ad shi iskaven l'shachsa, it has to be that he means to damage it. Here he didn't, he meant to cure him. So Reb Shimon Gamliel would hold he doesn't go l'cheiris with that. So, what are the Chachamim doing with that word, v'shichasa? What do they do with that word, v'shichasa? The answer is, they use it to teach us a different din. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Haresha Hoshit Yodai Lum Eshiv Chosei, suppose that the Shivcha is pregnant and the master sticks his hand into her womb to pull out the baby. And he reaches in there and he doesn't put his hands where he's carefully, and he accidentally blinds the baby there. So then Potter, then he would be Potter from that, and the baby doesn't go free. My time it has to be that he intends to damage it. In other words, here he wasn't even meaning to touch the eye at all. In the cases that we said in the previous braisa, he did mean to touch the eye or the tooth. He didn't mean to damage it, but he did mean to touch it. Here, b'chlal, he had no intention of touching the eye because he didn't put his hands in the right place. There was a different girsa that the Shita Lenoidolami and a few other Rishonim have. Prat lazushi mushcheses va'imedes. Here it's considered in a certain sense as though the eye is already damaged because the baby hasn't yet been born, so it can't really be considered like a full person to the extent that these dinim should apply to it. Anyway, so the Chachamim are learning that from the word v'shichasa. The idach, what would Reb Shimon Gamliel answer to that? He would say, v'shichas shichasa nafka. He says you could learn that from the fact that Torah could have said v'shichas, he damages, and instead it says v'shichasa, he damages it. So therefore, you can learn both dinim that he has to be meaning to touch the eye, therefore excluding the case of the baby in the womb, and also that it has to be that he meant to damage it, not the case where he was trying to cure the eye. But the idach, whereas the Chacham would say shichas alaydarish, they don't doubt in that way. They don't hold that's meant to teach us anything different. That's just the style of the pasuk. So they would say it doesn't matter as long as he meant to touch the eye or the tooth, even if his hand slips, then he's still then the Eved still goes free. And another din in this connection, Amr of Sheshes, Haresha Hoisa Enes Smuya. What if the eye was already blind? V'chatota, But now the master actually removed the eyeball altogether. So now, on the face of it, that wasn't working before, it's not working now, it shouldn't make a difference. But Eved Yotzeban L'Cheiros, still the Eved goes free. Because the difference is, Tosfa says that's exactly the difference. Before, it wasn't working, but at least it's still there. Here, it's not working, but now he made a Mechusar Eved, now he's completely missing that body part.
Take away from work.
No, doesn't take away from work, but it's still mum shabagoli, but in a choiz. My time of Mechusar Eved, because now he's lacking a limb. The Tuna Tuna, and indeed we learn a Mishnah that says a Braisa, rather, that says a similar idea in a Braisa, as far as Korbanus, Tamus v'zachus v'behema, the concept that a Korban has to be Tomim, that it can't have a mum, only applies to animals, and the concept that certain Korbanus have to be males, like a Chatas or an Oila, applies only to animals, v'in Tamus v'zachus v'oifus, those dinim do not apply to birds. A bird can be a Baal Mum, or it can be a female, and it doesn't matter. Yochol Yov Shagamba, you would think the same thing applies even if its wing dried up, Nikta Aragla, or if a leg was chopped off, Nechta Aina, or if an eye was removed, you would think you could still bring it as a korban. No, Talmud Loma, Min Ha'oif, V'loi Kola Oif. The Pasuk says you bring a korban from the birds, and the min is a miut, meaning V'loi Kola Oif. Not every kind of bird can be brought as a korban, namely not ones that are Mechusar Eved. In fact, even Tosfos points out, even a Ben Noyach can't bring a korban that's Mechusar Eved. Even if a Ben Noyach wants to bring a korban anywhere in the world, which they could, even nowadays, when there's no Beis Mikdash, they still can't bring a Mechusar Eved. So why do we need a pasuk to tell us that the same thing is true by Jews? Tosfos says, because for one thing, if it was only said once in the Torah, we would say it applies only to Jews and not to Bnei Noyach. So it needs to be told twice to know that it applies to Bnei Noyach, and again also that it applies to Jews.
You can't say for that you learn that it has to be kosher bird.
Well, no, because with that we know. The Torah says totem and b'nei yoino. It says specifically the two types of kosher birds you can bring as korbanos. But also, Tosfos says, another point is, you would think, look, you're allowed a baal mum by Orphis, maybe even mechusar eved, and therefore we have to be told that not, that mechusar eved not. The point being, in other words, that removing an eye makes it more of a mum than it otherwise would. If the bird had just been blind, you could have brought it as a korban, but now, when the eye is removed and it's mechusar eved, then not. So that's similar to Rav Sheshes' point. Even the eved was blind before, but now you actually removed the eye altogether. Nevertheless, that's enough to take him. That's enough to make him go free. Actually, Tosfos brings up the question. On the face of it, the difference is with the bird, not necessarily either. The bird wouldn't have been possible if the eye was blind. Here with the eved, the fact is, if you blinded his eye, he goes free. So it's not really the same thing. Tosfos asks the question, and then Achronim deal in various ways in a couple of different ways with answering the question. But the bottom line is, so what we have is as follows. If the eye or the tooth or what have you was normal, and now, let's say with the eye, if it was normal and now it's damaged, so it depends whether we can still see with it or not. If he removed it altogether, then for sure he goes free. If the eye was partially blind and he made it worse, then again, it depends, can he use it or not? Could he use it before and can he use it now? And then you have, for example, if he removed the eye, in all cases, he's going to go free. And we'll continue tomorrow. Even in Fajir, right. And then you have the Machalikas, the Chum, and Reb Shimon Gamliel. What if he didn't mean to damage the eye? He was doing something else in connection with the eye, and he damaged it. The Chum will say the Eved still goes free. Reb Shimon Gamliel says he won't.
Why would he go free?
Because he did mean to touch the eye. They learned from, they said, B'shichasa excludes only the case of the baby in the womb. But other than that, you did mean to touch the eye. It's your problem that you were careless and you caused the eye to go blind. The fact is you meant to touch it. As opposed to Rav Shem Gamliel says you have to be touching it with intent to damage. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, talking about these dinim. We'll give the full list of these Evarim, and we'll talk about other related dinim.